today's podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've learned over the last year and things that might stick around moving forward, things we've learned from the pandemic, as well as things we're looking forward to getting back to. And we're going to get into talking about coordinating the passing game. And joining me to discuss those things, the co-offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach at Washington State University, Craig Stutzman. Craig, always great to talk ball with you and great to have you back here on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Keith, man. Always great to be on.
Well, Craig, it's been an interesting year, and you and I certainly have crossed paths and talked some over this last 12 months or so, from, you know, the different clinics that you've been involved in to just texting some things back and forth and phone calls here and there. But this year certainly has presented challenges. It's presented some opportunities to do new things. And the thing that's been of interest to me most as we look back on the last 12 months are, you know, what are some of the things that coaches have learned and maybe can continue now moving forward? So for you, what things come to mind with that? You know, the things that, you know, you had the opportunity, really, we all hit pause for a long time. We didn't know what was going on. We researched new things. We were forced into new things. But I think we also discovered that there's different ways of doing things. So for you, what were some of those?
Yeah, the first thing was the ability to communicate in a different way with your players and with recruits and high school coaches and coaches on staff. I mean, it's as simple as before this past 12 months or 13 months, whatever it's been, I was always a little uncomfortable with FaceTiming with recruits, or, you know, just a little foreign to me. And, you know, with how things have been structured and the way that we've got to get about doing things with Zoom and being on FaceTime a lot, I felt a lot more comfortable with that. And, you know, that was something that, you know, I got better at. And now, you know, FaceTiming and Zooming, I mean, that's awesome. I'd love to do it. I'd love to do it every day, whether it's with high school coaches, whether it's with recruits, or whether it's with players, our players. Another thing that I thought the most beneficial thing for us here at Washington State was being able to be around our players a lot more with being mandated to stay, you know, in your towns during COVID, during the pandemic and all that stuff early on. You know, typically when you come in as a new staff, right, you get in, you get back on the road and you recruit, and then you come back and you spend some time with your players, and then, you know, you go back on the road and recruit again. And so being, you know, stuck in Pullman, so to speak, it allowed us the opportunity to really work on the culture that Coach Rolovich wanted to create and has been great at creating. And being around our players during, you know, a really tough time, I think a lot of people think of it as it was tough mentally, right, and emotionally to go through this. And what I think a lot of people fail to realize, you know, that we're dealing with 17, 18 to 22, 23-year-old young men. And, you know, although football is a passion and going to school is a top priority, you know, the pandemic has really brought a lot of hardships, I think, mentally and emotionally to some of our players. So being able to be around them and comfort them and just, you know, let them know it's going to be all right and we're going to be here for them was the first thing that Coach Walla wanted to make sure that we did. So we were able to do that. And also we were able to talk a lot of football, being able to tell them not just how we're going to do things, but why we're going to do things, and build that trust and build that relationship and be around them a lot more time, and giving them that actual face time, I think was really important to Washington State and to what we were able to do. I think also schematically, it gave us a lot of time to really push the envelope and see, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is who we are. But are there different things that we could do to get better? You know, a lot of times when you're on the road and recruiting, a lot of those things kind of get pushed to the wayside, and you don't really get around to that. And you say, gosh, man, I wish we would have thought about this earlier and maybe be able to work through it in spring ball or in the summer. So we got a chance to do some of that too. And then I just think overall, getting a head start on watching a lot of film of potential student athletes, you know, I just know this before we started spring ball this year, myself and our QC, Colby Castle, was able to look at over 160 something, you know, 2023 quarterbacks, and, you know, being ahead that way and being able to look and evaluate the film for recruiting in the future, which is, you know, the bloodline of any program is recruiting. we were able to kind of take a step further and be ahead in that respect. And it's been really good so far.
It's funny when, you know, I heard you talking about, you know, being comfortable being on FaceTime or Zoom or, you know, those things have been around actually for a while. FaceTime feels like forever. You know, Zoom's been about for a number of years, but, you know, I don't think we were comfortable in, you know, we had all those modes that we could get, you know, network that way, learn from each other that way. We just weren't doing it. And when it became, that's the only way we had for a while, everybody got pretty good at it. Nobody has any issues now, you know, getting on a Zoom or talking to somebody that way face to face. And it's just kind of crazy that it took us being forced into it, I guess, to get used to that form of communication.
Absolutely. And as we all know, a lot of times, right, we got to be put in the uncomfortable spot to want it to change and be forced to change sometimes. And the Zoom thing and FaceTimes and all those things, it's really made us a lot more efficient, you know, being able to communicate with our players and maybe, hey, I know right now, like I was talking to a couple of coaches in the NFL when they started first doing this. And they said, you know what, our players, they're professionals, but gosh, we limit this to like 40 minutes on Zoom. So, you know, early on, we're starting to Zoom and we're going over some installs, we're going over plays, we're watching film. And, you know, the first couple of times it was like an hour and a half, right? And so with the quarterback. So then I go ahead on the next Zoom call, it's kind of a recap, like what do they retain? And gosh, there was not much retention there. So as we all know, as being a great teacher is about not just teaching, but having the people that you're teaching, your students, being able to retain that knowledge. So then I started going with about 30 to 40 minute bursts of Zooms. And gosh, you know, the retention numbers was up. Guys were a lot more engaged. You didn't see guys kind of like almost falling asleep on Zoom and stuff like that. So it was funny, like, you know, just being efficient, streamlining these things. And if you are to make those Zoom installs, you know, 30, 40 minutes or whatever, even if it's just one concept, you better be prepared like anything else in life, right? You better be prepared just like you're going into a position meeting if your players are coming into the room. So it taught us a lot, taught us to be efficient and how to really cater to the learning process for our players ultimately.
So moving forward, as things get back to quote unquote normal, what things remain? What things stick with you? It might not be all of the, you know, the different forms that we've used, but I guess maybe some of the methods, some of the strategies that had to go along with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, some things like some of the recorded Zooms or, you know, we have a VR room where we have, you know, one of our camera guys will be back there and he'll record it and, you know, just forcing these guys to understand like, hey, there are VR, you know, film here for you. Even though it might be 6 months old, it doesn't matter. Like, get your reps in because you don't know. I think what we learned in this offseason was we didn't have that much time to prepare for our first game, right? And there wasn't much time on the field. But guess what? Like, the rest of the Pac-12 didn't have that much time either. Like, we all were allotted at the same time. And so what can we do and how can we be creative in preparing our players to not only be physically but mentally ready to play the game? And I think our players saw that side of it too is, hey, we got to be even better with being diligent on watching film or what are we watching or how are we watching things? And also the time that they have to spend, right? We always talk about what makes a difference between ordinary and extraordinary, that little extra. Like, you got to go ahead and take your receivers out there and get the timing of these routes and learn, you know, the body language of your receivers when they're running certain routes and where do they like the football and quarterback wise, you know, with our drops and with our eyes and with our reads, you know, visualizing certain things happening and just getting those extra reps and pushing themselves to be great in that respect. And then also not being afraid to call or text and, you know, hey coach, can we get a separate Zoom time where we can watch film together? Hey, I don't really understand this. And understanding, like, just because you leave the building, you know, the coaching from the player and coach's standpoint, just because you leave the facility, it doesn't matter. Coaching ends there. At any point in time, they can shoot a text message and be like, hey, coach, can we jump on Zoom real quick and go over, you know, streak? Yes, absolutely. You know what I mean? So, hey, it's Sunday and we got practice on Monday. And hey, coach, you know, can we just go over this script one more time? Absolutely. You know, how can we get that done? Do you need an email to you? Do you need us to get on the Zoom and I can talk you through it? Can we draw some things up? So just using all those different avenues and understanding that communication is key to any success and, you know, being open and being creative with your communication and how you can reach your players so they understand things fully.
Were you guys able to find any efficiencies in the ways you know, again, were forced to do some of these things as a staff, you know, not you guys to your players, but, you know, you guys working with each other? Did you find any efficiencies in that?
Yeah. You know, I will say this. We as a staff, we've been together for a few years now. So I think that helps a lot, right? Understanding what does 90 switch look like and what should it look like and all that sort of stuff. I think really where we were better at was being able to the evaluation in the recruitment process and how to get offers out and all those sort of things, I think happened a lot quicker for us because we were able to at any point in time jump on Zoom or Rolla would shoot out a text message and say, you know, on a text thread, hey, check this guy out. And we were able to get back and take a look at it as a staff pretty quickly. So those were one thing. But, you know, when you're blessed to be around the same type of guys and the same coaching staff, especially on offense, as long as we have, I think, you know, it wasn't as challenging maybe, and I don't think we're inefficient in many ways. So I think, you know, it wasn't that big of a challenge, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. So looking at maybe things getting back to normal here, anything, you're ready to say, you know, we had to do it here, but I am glad to be moving back to the way we did it before.
Absolutely. I mean, anytime that you're physically around your players and physically around the coach and staff and you're in the building and, you know, it's a different mindset, right? I think that was another challenge too, was doing work from home and having, you know, a built-in office to your home. And jumping through hoops on gosh, I think this is here, this is there. When you come into your facility, you come into your office, like everything, you know where things are, right? And it's a lot easier. It's a lot more efficient. So it's definitely great to be back in the building. It's definitely great to be back around our players, be on the field with our players when we're allowed to, be in the weight room with our players when we're allowed to, and just continue creating that relationship and that trust.
Flipping the switch here and getting into our other topic, coordinating the passing game. It's something, you know, you've done throughout your career, you know, whether you've been the coordinator, co-coordinator, passing game coordinator, you've been able to divide things up. And I think that's just, you know, again, whether titles go along with that or not, giving, you know, certain coaches ownership in parts of the offensive game plan, I think is just an efficiency that you can find and really create some of that buy-in if people do have the ability to do those things. And obviously you want everybody to be able to contribute. But as you look at it, you know, as the guy in charge of the passing game, where is your starting point for how you want to break things down and start looking at an opponent as you get ready for that next week?
Right. And I think, you know, everybody has their system. Everybody has their way. For us at Washington State, you know, the first thing I like to do is we don't have very much formations. And so what that allows us to do is be able to really take out a lot of things that we're looking at from the opponent. We are able to focus in on, you know, certain formations, certain personnel groupings, and being able to find consistencies in coverage keys. I think that is, you know, primarily, I think that is really important to the quarterback. If we can, because I'll tell them this every time, right? So we go into a game and say we were just in an open set 2x2, right? And we're playing against, you know, Team B, okay? And Team B is showing 10 separate coverages in the first three games of the season. We're playing them in the fourth game. Well, you know, it's pretty hard to play quarterback when you got 10 possible coverages, and at the snap of the ball, you got to make a decision, right? Because run and shoot's dependent on route adjustments versus defenses and defensive coverages and leverages and all those things. So if we can limit, you know, that 10 possible coverages down to two or three, because we've done a great job of looking at a film and identifying certain keys, well, guess what? Our quarterback's going to be that much better, and his probability of succeeding on every play is going to be better. If we can cut it down to about two or three possible coverages pre-snap, and post-snap, you know, things happen, and our quarterback's able to decipher that, he's going to be successful. He's going to know where to go with the football. He's going to make good decisions, and he's going to make accurate throws. So the biggest thing right now, I mean, you know, that we've had success with is going through our formation cutups, and also down in distances too, right? And field zones, and just figuring out, you know, what are the possible coverages. And the second thing is, you know, looking at, all right, okay, they may not have shown this, but in their philosophy, or maybe, you know, they've kind of, maybe it's not a high probability, maybe it's only one or two reps of a certain coverage, but gosh, that thing might give our offense, our pass game, a little bit of problems here. We got to also practice that. Okay. So the first and foremost thing that I'm looking at, yeah, is just trying to find tendencies, try to find keys, and trying to help the quarterback understand what coverage is he going to see.
Love to hear a little bit more about just your method in looking for those coverage keys. Cause I agree with you, having, you know, the last few years work with quarterbacks, every single week during their season, just on film, right? And going through and letting them talk through their game plan, what their coaches have planned, and then looking at their opponents. One of the biggest things I was able to do with them was to say, all right, well, let's take a look at, you know, how these guys are aligned right here. What are their tip-offs? What mm-hmm. things start to make it easier for you, clue you in on this is what they're going to do based on alignment, a reaction to emotion, whatever it might be. What things right. do you look at? And again, I know it could vary a little bit from coach to coach with what you're using, but for you, what are the important things?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with identifying, right, what player is in, or what defensive player is in what position. And it's funny because, right, there was this big story. It's a big story in the NFL where I think Tom Brady is not very fond of the idea that guys are able to wear different jersey numbers, right? I think that was a hot topic a few weeks ago. And I understand that because, you know, if you're able to go ahead and find out which player is in what position, whether it's a safety, you know, whether it's corners, because if you're going corners over, then obviously, you know, probability is going to be man-to-man or whatever it is. But finding out where those guys are, is that you know, boundary stand-up backer, right? That's like a rush end guy out there. Is he into the back? Oh, he's to the field. Okay. Well, something's up here. You know what I mean? So I think first we do a good job of identifying what players typically are where. Okay. And then understanding for quarterbacks on their receivers, depth and leverage give us a lot of things. You know, defensive back coaches or defensive coordinators, right? It's all about leverages. It's all about getting their guys in position to be successful. Well, that also, you know, it gives us keys on what coverage could possibly come. The other thing too, is we talk a lot about with the quarterbacks, what are the fronts? The first thing that we go through when a quarterback comes in our meeting, we will go through what is an over front, what's an under front, what's three down, what's bare, what's this, what's that, what's a three technique, what's a five, what's a four, right? Because they got to understand anything that's closest to the football is the most important thing, okay? Everything's built inside out like anything else. So with that said, if certain players in the secondary, or maybe you see maybe safety rotation here or there, let's also identify the front. Where are the backers? Are the backers lined up where they're supposed to be in this, typically in this front? Are they bossed over this way? Are they bumped this way? Is it a 4-1 box? You know what I mean? Because everything's going to be tied in to the integrity of gap, you know, being gap sound for a defensive front. And how are those backers and the secondary guys and safeties, how do they fit into that you know, fit, so to speak, right? So we're looking at the game holistically. And I think if you just give your quarterbacks or receivers or whoever it is, your center, maybe just one or two tips or one or two guys that you're keen, gosh, man, and you're playing a really good defense coordinator or whatnot, you're going to have a hard time, right? We got to take a step back and look at this game holistically. And so as a quarterback, we're always looking at fronts, where's those backers at, where those safeties are, and what type of technique those corners are playing, where they're leveraged on the wide out. So I think when you're able to kind of get those guys dialed into it and understand, say, hey, number five, the nickel out there, he typically lined up there. You know, the free safety is number 10, and the boundary safety is number one. Well, guess what? If those three guys are in different positions, then you know, off of film, what does that tell you, right? Does that mean that there's pressure coming there? Does that mean it's more, you know, man-to-man type coverage? Is it going to be like a one high zone? Do they get to their Tampa twos or three double clouds? So I think, you know, it's all encompassing, but kind of just teaching them that piece by piece so they don't get overwhelmed is a big part for us.
So as you start to break those things down and figure out, you know, what coverages you're going to be attacking and maybe what might
Right.
be some of the problem coverages, how do you go about then matching, you know, that menu of what you want to carry into that game plan, to be able to attack those things to maybe what you're going to leave out? Because, you know, I know for me, we had five pass families and I might carry three. Or emphasize three,
Right.
and the other two maybe have, you know, very minority my minor use in our in our game plan. But you know, again, making
Right.
those decisions then based on some of that initial data you're getting from the defense, how do you go about that?
Yeah, you know, the cool thing about the run and shoot is that essentially anything that you call can grow into a coverage beater, right? So we have very little concepts, you know, in our offense where it's like, hey, if it's cover two, then, you know, you're dead to rights on this play because this concept isn't great versus it, or it's not going to work versus it. Everything that we do has route adjustments that gives the quarterbacks answers and the receivers the ability to get open. So I think rather than taking plays out or not running certain plays, it's more of, we got to rep these plays against these potential coverages a lot and make sure our receivers are getting the proper depth or they're making the right break, you know, or they're making the right read. And the quarterback, his eyes start off in the right position. He's reading the right person, the right defender. The ball's going to the spot that it should versus coverage in our concept. So we don't really, how should I say, you know, take plays out in certain situations. Now, yes, there are. If we're say in the on the 15-yard line, obviously we're not going to call concepts that call for maybe 40 yards, you know, down the field depth with that spacing. We're going to call some concepts that's going to fit that spacing. But I think the other thing too, where a lot of coordinators are good and they and guys are understanding this is where and I've learned this from talking with a lot of other coaches and guys in the NFL or guys around college or high school. It's like, right, defenses are getting a lot better at preventing big explosive plays. So we're seeing less explosive plays per play in a game. So what we have to do is we have to be better at understanding in certain situations, what's the likelihood that we're going to get maybe a certain coverage and how are we going to take our shot or are we going to take our shot at this point in time in this situation? Okay. So with that said, like if you're a team that's a team that's going to go forward on fourth down quite a bit, well, you know, everybody knows probably in America, right? Second and two, hey, defenses, they'd rather give a first down rather than giving up a big play over the top, right? So maybe third and two is when you take your shot if you know you got four downs. You know what I mean? Maybe it's not. Maybe the situation calls for you to get the first down. So there's and these analytic reports, right, gives you those probabilities too on when you should go forward on fourth down and all those sort of things. But I think it's pretty cool when you put together a game plan, like you said, and that's why we do have all of our coaches, offensive coaches on staff, has certain types of zones or that you know on the call sheet that they're responsible for situations, because there's only so many hours in a day and there's only so many hours in a week to prepare. And everybody was hired because they are good at what they do, okay, and they're responsible for what they do. They're accountable and they're smart. They're smart coaches. So giving responsibility to those guys to be, say, in charge of really, you know, the responsibility is third and, you know, third downs or, or it's red zone, tight red zone, high red zone, whatever it is, being able to go ahead and distribute those responsibilities to those guys calls for, I guess, more attention in that area, and they can better explain to us, hey, why we want to do it. Because football is all about why, right? It's not about just how, it's about why. And I think once we understand the why and the players understand the why, then it becomes a lot more fun, because now you're cooking with gas. You know why things are happening, you know why you're doing things, and there's a high level of understanding. But I don't know if that answers your question. I know that was a little roundabout way of getting to it, but you know, I think that's the juice right there.
Yeah, definitely answers the question. Kind of, I guess, an offshoot of that then. You mentioned, you know, other people looking at things for you and bringing that together. And, you know, I mean, if you look at the word coordinate, it means to bring together, right? So
right.
Doesn't mean that you have to be the guru of everything. Certainly you want to be the most knowledgeable, but as far as, you know, meeting with your coaches, your guys who are assigned different areas and bringing all that together, how does that come about for you? What has been the most effective way for you to bring that together and to make those decisions?
Yeah, so every day, right, whether it's you're doing normal downs on a Sunday, or you're doing Monday, you're doing, you know, third downs, and, you know, Wednesday or Tuesday, you're doing red zone or whatever it may be. At the end, we typically have the first half of the day to kind of go over, you know, our film and what we're trying to get done. And, you know, once that's done, we go ahead and we meet all together, and, you know, we'll go around the room and just basically give a little presentation on some of the things that we're thinking, some of the things that we saw on film. And, you know, maybe there's a couple of new ideas, because we don't ever want to be robots. We don't ever want to say there's only one way we do things here at Washington State and the run and shoot. You know, there might be a new concept that we might like. Hey, guess what? You know, the team that played, you know, on offense against the opponent the week before, maybe they have a concept that's pretty cool. And maybe that fits. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? We got to find what fits our offense and what makes sense to our players, and not just throwing something that, like, oh, okay, hey, guess what? This team did something crazy versus the opponent, and gosh, man, we can make it work too. Well, if that's not what we do and it doesn't fit what we do, then how do we expect our players to understand it and execute it at a high level? So, you know, there's a fine line with that, but yeah, we'll come together at the end, and there might be a concept, whether it's a pass or run or a screen or anything like that, or a new RPO that maybe we can go ahead and it might fit. And, you know, Rubble's great about giving us the flexibility to maybe have a little bit of fun with it and see if it'll work, and have maybe one or two plays in practice where we practice it. And sometimes it looks awful, right? It looks great on the whiteboard. But when you have your players doing it, it's like, oh my gosh, what were we thinking? And there's some times we're like, ooh, hey, I think we got something here. So there's a lot of experience in our offensive staff room from various universities previously and different levels. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's high school ball or if it's professional ball and everywhere in between, you know, Pop Warner, whatever it is. Like, football is football. And good football is good football, and good plays are good plays. It's just all about execution.
Yeah, you mentioned having that idea that maybe you see, you know, will attack the other opponent. Other people have made it work, but, you know, that fit within not just your own offense, but also your thought process as a guy who on game day is making those decisions and making those calls and making sure, okay, when it's a passing down, we're calling this play. You know, it took me really deep into my career to understand that some of those ideas that come up, even ones that are my own, I'm not going to feel comfortable calling them because it doesn't fit in a certain way, you know. And I can remember eventually getting to that point, like telling a coach, like, I love that idea and this looks great, but here's why I'm not going to put it into the game plan, because here's where, you know, there's a sticking point in my thought process, or how I think this might not fit with us. That's, I think when you could get to that point, when you understand those things, you know, it's not, you know, just dumping on somebody's idea, but it's really, I think, getting that clarification for everybody. When you can understand that and communicate it to everyone, I think everybody starts to be able to get on the same page a little bit better and start to see things through that lens. Not that you want everybody thinking the same way, but at least you need some kind of filter for those things that people aren't going down a road and wasting time.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, you know, I think as long as everybody's on the same page, everybody understands, hey, there's a lot of great ideas out there. It doesn't matter if it's triple option or if it's, you know, wing tee or run and shoot or whatever it may be. You know, there's so many good football plays out there, but it's what we're comfortable with. And if coaches have creativity, it's at least letting them voice like, okay, what do you like about this and why? And maybe sometimes it fits, maybe sometimes it doesn't. But like you said, when it's all said and done, you know, there's decisions that have to be made and tough decisions have to be made. And as long as, you know, everybody understands why and we get on the same page with it and move on, we're going to be great. And I will say this, you know, for us here at Washington State, a lot of times what I like to do with the quarterbacks and Rolo likes to do too is that, like, hey, if this player, this quarterback, this starting quarterback is not comfortable with this concept, and we'll do this Friday night, okay, I'll go ahead and we'll get the game plan and we'll go through it with the quarterbacks and we'll take a look at it and I say, hey, take it to bed tonight. So they go back and take it to bed and I say, I want you to cross out the plays that you don't like. I want you to circle the plays that you like and I want you to start the plays that you guys love, okay, in every situation. Just go ahead and get that done. And in the morning we'll come back, we'll talk about it again. Okay, we'll talk about it again. And then we'll go to Rolo and Brian and we'll say, hey, like, this kid doesn't feel comfortable with this. This guy doesn't feel comfortable. He loves this. He loves that. So at least there's an idea there of, you know, the guy that's pulling the trigger on the field, the players, you know, and we'll even ask receivers. We'll ask running backs. We'll ask whoever, linemen, whatever it is. Like, what do you guys love? What do you guys don't love? Because when it's all said and done, you know, the power of positivity and, like, the belief is probably one of the most powerful things out there. And if the guys believe in this play in critical moments, and guess what? The likelihood of it working is pretty dang high. And so players play the game. Coaches coach and help out. We gather information. We disseminate through some of that stuff and we give it to them. But players play the game. This is a player's game, man. So if those guys feel comfortable with things and they love it and they're confident, then guess what? Why not call those plays? Because they're the ones that's going to execute and make it work.
I highly recommend that exercise with your quarterbacks. I've had several guys on this podcast who talk about doing exactly that. I know Andrew Coverdale, who now is at St. Xavier here in Ohio, an incredible high school football coach, has that meeting. He has his love it, like it list with his quarterbacks, and something
right.
I would do as well. And I found, you know, we would do it with all of our quarterbacks, not just the starter. Early in seasons, and I just talked about this with somebody. I honestly can't remember if it was on the podcast or in a separate conversation, but I found I would kind of watch quarterbacks, you know, especially the younger guys, as the older guy was up there talking through what he liked and whatever, and found those guys starting to mirror him. And so sometimes I'd have to do the meeting separately where I'd have, right. You know, the yep. one, number one guy go up there and be honest with me. And then the number two guy do it separately, you know, because it was, I didn't want him to think, especially the number two, that this was some kind of, you know, I'm not testing you. I really want to know what you feel most comfortable with. And I think the younger guys struggle with it a little bit more. The starter's going to do it because that's, I mean, his right. job's on the line, but you need to know from right. those backups too. They're a snap away, right? You need to know from them, where are you most comfortable? Because if things change, that's where I want to be able to put you.
Absolutely. Rolo made sure every weekend, it's funny because I know what he's going to say, but he always has to say it, right? And it's true. And it's find out not just what you start, but, hey, what is so-and-so like? You know, what is so-and-so? And we go down for the guys that's on the roster or the guys that's traveling. So the top three quarterbacks, like, what are they like? What are they not like? Because it's like going to a restaurant, right? If you're going to go to a restaurant and you got a chance to talk to the chef and you're like, hey, what do you love to cook? And if that chef tells you what he loves to cook, then he's probably going to cook that thing really, really good. He knows the ins and outs of it. You're not going to go to a chef and say, hey, what do you like? And he says, or what do you don't like? And he tells you what he really don't like. So, and he, okay, make that. He's not going to put that effort into it, or he doesn't truly believe in that recipe or whatever it is. There's no difference in them playing quarterback and really playing football. So, but yeah, being able, and I will say this, it's funny. We just had a meeting the other day, and you know, Jaden Delora was our starting quarterback last year. He was a freshman, and I remember telling him every week, like, "Hey, what do you like? What do you don't like?" "Oh, coach, I like everything." No. Okay. If you had to take out, I'm telling you, if you got to take out 10, which 10 you want to take out? None of them, coach. I like all of them. You know what I mean? So like, yes, or that the meeting the other day that we had, we did an exercise, and then I said, "Hey, so remember what we talked about, you know, before the games and this and that?" I said, "Now what would you take out?" He goes, "Oh, coach, I probably would have taken out at least maybe 20 of those." Like, well, then, you know, I think a lot of it has to be, like you said, you know, the younger guys, you know, being secure and understanding it's not a test, it's not to bash you. It's hey, what do you like? We're just trying to help you out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So,
Right.
but that's true, man. And yeah, that's probably the best thing that's the best advice that I got from Matt LaFleur. I got to know him years ago, and I said, "What do you love? Like, what's the one thing that you will do before the game?" He goes, "I make sure that I tell those guys, if you don't like it, take it out. If you love it, make sure you tell me, because we're going to call the plays that you love."
Absolutely. I know another great idea I picked up, and I'll preface this by saying, for me, scripting was a very detailed function for me, in that I wanted to know how many reps over the course of a week could I get a particular play, and really pay attention to that. However, a coach shared with me what he does with his quarterbacks, you know, and it's not every period, but he'll do it. I think this is a good one for spring ball. I think it's a good one for camp, and maybe you do it for, you know, a period or two during the week. But let them call the plays. Let them, you know, this is what we're going to run right now. Put it in their hands. Go through and take notes. Have somebody write down, all right, these are the things he called. Because I would bet in there, he's going to be in his confidence area, right? He's going to tell you through that period that these are the things I feel best about because I'm calling them. Or, you know, maybe you get that guy, as you start to stretch him within those, to think outside his framework a little bit and try to get more confident in some of those other things. But I thought that was a you know, a good exercise, something that I think anybody can insert into. Again, doesn't have to be in season if you're not comfortable with that, but certainly camp or spring ball.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. We'll do that in our routes on the other period. You know, where we have our coaches, we're giving them a look on defense because everything's route or coverage related, right? Everything's based off coverage. So we'll be on there playing defense, and it's funny you say that. Rollo will, you know, once a week or something like that in routes on air, he'll just be like, "Hey, you guys call it, okay?" So every route, you know, or whatever, every concept, every rep, you know, each quarterback will rotate calling a play, and all four quarterbacks will throw it to the four receivers. But yeah, it's a good exercise to see what they're comfortable with, and also too, that's a moment right in practice where you can test their knowledge and say, "Well, this pairs up front side with this back side. Hey, this doesn't pair up with it," and that clues us into, okay, we got to maybe spend more time with him understanding what pairs with what on certain concepts. The other thing too, that it was the same meeting about taking out plays or keeping plays in. What do you like? What do you love? What do you not like? And all that stuff. I'll tell those quarterbacks, you know, if you want a certain rep in like a concept or RPO or whatever it is, whether it's 7-on-7s or if it's a team period or scout period, whatever it is, just text me. Just text me. Tell me, "Hey, coach, can I work this concept?" Text me. I'll go ahead 5, 10 minutes before practice starts, and I'll change your rep to what I have in there, and I'll put that in there because it's what those guys want to get practice at. They play the game. It comes back down to the players play the game. So yeah, I'll tell them it doesn't matter if it's the night before, if it's right after a position meeting, or if it's an hour before practice. If there's a certain type of concept or few concepts that you want to work, text it to me, and I will put it in for your reps. And so, and I think that's the beauty of not having, you know, the running shoot where you have, you know, 10 personnel and you got limited formations, and we don't have a lot of plays. We have quite a bit, but we don't have a ton of plays. So our quarterbacks are able to go ahead and tell you, hey, this is what I like to work, and we can plug it in, and it doesn't really, you know, set us back at all.
Absolutely. Coach, moving things along through the process then, you know, you make your decisions and you start putting together a call sheet, right? And I'm always interested in what call sheets look like, but also then how you prioritize calls, like what's going to be that first call in a certain section of the game plan down to, you know, whatever might be, let's say your sixth or your eighth or whatever the last one is for you. How do you guys go about prioritizing those?
Yeah, the first few plays will always have, you know, it's really based on the opponent that you're playing. You know, there's some games that will go in that will say, hey, we want to have various formations to see how they line up to it. You know, there's some times where we think that possibly there's a shot opportunity in the first five, so we'll take a shot in that first five. And there's some times where it's like, hey, you know what? We just want to go ahead and just play good football in the first five plays. What's our five best plays we've been, you know, feeling comfortable with? So I think a lot of it is opponent driven. You know, it's not really, this is how we do things and we're stuck to this ways. It's a feel thing. So, you know, I'm trying to think back, and there's not something that we say, hey, this is exactly what we're going to do every first five, but it's various. And then what Rollo likes to do is he likes to give it to the players the night before the game, so the players can visualize, you know, what the play call is going to be, and they can visualize, you know, if you're the receiver, the receiver here, and you got this route concept versus this coverage, and you're going to, you know, what does it look like for you to beat that defender? And what does it look like in your mind of catching that football and scoring the touchdown? And what are you going to do after you score the touchdown? So it gives them that visualization. And you know, that's a powerful thing too, is a guy's got to be able to see it before it happens. That's what practice is for. And that's what the power of visualization is for. Big proponent in that. And I think, especially with the quarterbacks and with every player, you know, I think, it doesn't matter what sport it is. It doesn't matter if it's baseball. It doesn't matter if it's basketball, making the game winning shot. It doesn't matter if it's boxing. You know, what does it look like? Shadow boxing, all that stuff. The visualization and understanding of what the plays are going to be, especially in the beginning of the game, making those guys feel comfortable with it, is powerful. So, you know, it's not always the same. It's not always the same philosophy going into the first five, but at least we give those guys a first five before the game is or the night before the game. And then, you know, the call sheet. One side is base plays, the other side is special situations, and you know, some things could change here and there. We could, if we got a new play, maybe we take something out, maybe we don't. But that is probably the most consistent thing about our game is our call sheets, just because we don't have a lot of plays and we rep it a ton versus defenses, and we're a counter-based offense.
With that, as you're looking at the different situations, do you put any time into thinking about your firsts in a situation? So as an example, the first time you're in a third and long, you know, this is the play we feel best about. Do you guys try to organize those before the game?
Yeah. So those special situations on the third downs, there is a priority on that, based on what type of coverage, what type of front, is there going to be pressure, probabilities, and all those things. But you know, it's like anything else in football, right? After the first time you kind of get to those situations, you get a feel for what's going on, then you may skip, you know, to what's on the, maybe, you know, third and long, you call this play, and all of a sudden you realize that this is the coverage or this is what's going on defensively. You look down that priority list or that list of plays in that third down situation, you're like, you know what, that second one's not going to be good. Let's get to the third or the fourth one. You know what I mean? So it's all based on, you know, that scouting report and what do the numbers say. But, you know, as you know, any good coordinator, any good coach, once the game's going, man, you got to be able to adjust, right? You see the same thing. Coaches are too good. Defensive coordinators are getting too good, like keeping you on your toes and changing the pictures for you and making the quarterback and the offensive line feel uncomfortable. So the ability to adjust is as important as the ability to prepare, I say. So, you know, that's kind of how we roll.
I've always viewed the game as a series of mini game plans. Just like you said, once things get going, things start to change. And I know in the you know few minutes I have between series, it's always about getting our information together. For me, when I would split that up and really get our offensive line coaches' feelings on both the run game and protection, and myself with the passing game, going through, getting that feedback really quick, and then putting together, all right, here's what the next series might look like, and even pulling in some of those situational things. Okay, we hit a third and long in this one. It's going to be this, third and mediums, this. If we pop into the red zone on a big play, here's where I'm going next. Just thinking about all those things, again, like I said, kind of the mini game plan, all these little mini game plans within a game. What's your approach between series?
Yeah, we'll do the same thing. So, Brian will get on the headset. And he'll ask kind of, hey, what do we like in the pass game? He'll talk to our offensive line coach, Mark Weber. Hey, what do we like in the run game? Kind of the same thing, kind of putting together or what kind of RPOs do we want to run in this series? Rollo will jump on and we'll kind of talk through some of those things to see if the next series we can get those play calls out. The other thing that I really like about, I guess it has to do with the dynamic of our offensive staff and not having egos on anything, but just wanting to be successful, is that as the game is going and, the series is going, like if Rollo sees something or Brian sees something or I see something, we have, we have an open dialogue of, hey, let's get to this, like essentially we have three or four coordinators on the offensive side of the ball. It's like five coordinators, whatever it is, like, hey, let's get to this, and there's very any time where anyone in the headset says, no, I just want to do this. So it's pretty open. And a lot of times those are where the big plays hit, because we're all watching the game from a different perspective, right? Everybody has the responsibilities of where their eyes are, right? So if somebody sees something, a chink in the armor in a series, and there's a suggestion, well, we suggest it. And a lot of times those have led to big plays. And that's been really cool about our offensive staff. And I think it's really a testament to the relationship that we have and the trust that we have in one another. That's pretty cool. Now, I got a question for you. So if, I've heard some people that at halftime, they'll go ahead and maybe create another first five. Have you ever done that before?
Yeah, definitely. It ranged from going and creating a new first five to looking at the success of what were the first things, we did when we came out in the game. How many of those apply or what tweaks can we make to them? We had a lot of success with our openers and, putting those together. And we had a process for that too. So I'll take a step back on the openers. And I got this from Ian Shoemaker who's now the offensive coordinator at Eastern Washington. He was my predecessor at BW and used to go in clinic with him. And on Wednesdays after practice, they had their two main working days, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday after practice, everybody would come in and put, I can't remember how many we'd do. I think everybody put their top five plays on the board, right? They just went and wrote their name and wrote those five down. And then it started a conversation. It wasn't like, okay, I'm going to go through and pick all these. It started the conversation between us. Why'd you put those up there? And so that was a useful exercise. And so halftime kind of would work a little bit as, very quickly because you don't have a lot of time for all the discussion.
Right.
But a mini planning period like that where, we're getting that input from the guys. Everybody had a different thing they're looking at. Things they would get from their players as well, and we would put those together. We usually went with 10 to start at halftime. I think we did cut that in half and go with five because we were just in like I said, kind of just planning that next series. But it would go into a little bit more consideration on these are the things we really want to focus on in the second half.
Right. No, that's cool. I've heard of that. I've never really been exposed to anything like that before. Obviously you go in there and talk through what was successful for us, and what do we want to get back to? And, what are we thinking their adjustments are going to be and kind of creating another menu or maybe kind of cutting down the list of stuff. But I've heard of of that before, but I've never kind of gone through or been a part of a staff that has done that before. So I've always wondered about that.
The best part of when you do any openers, whether that's out the door in the second half or at the beginning of the game, is when you can get done with that list and you all agree, like, let's run that list again. You know, and that's happened before.
Where yeah, I was going to say, what about, yeah, so you guys have repeated, like, a list before.
Yeah, always.
Like, repeat the openers.
We did. And you know, I studied heavily Brian Billick and Bill Walsh and how they would game plan. I can't tell you how many times I read Billick's book, but, you know, they would talk about their first 10, but we really wouldn't go through that first 10 and worry about, like, what if we're in, you know, third and long on this play, or what if, you know, what if we end up in goal line? Because if we hit a situation, we kind of would always look at what's the next play. Okay, I feel good about it, roll with it. Or, yeah, it doesn't fit for this right now, then we just go into the situational. If we are successful,
so
and get back
really
on.
Got through that whole
right.
List.
If we got back on track, like, let's say it was a third and long and the next play was a run. Well, we're going to our third and long. We pick up the first down, then we're back to the next play. And that's not anything I invented. That's how Billick and Walsh would do it.
Right. No, that's cool. Cool. I like that.
So I guess moving things forward, you know, we've talked about the game here, the adjustments, halftime, you get done with the game and it's time to evaluate. Mm-hmm. Not only how did our players do, but evaluate yourself as a coach. Cause I think you have to be doing that too. You have to be not only looking
right.
at, all right, what was the execution of our players, but what was my decision making like? And that's not always the first thing I think you look at, right? I think there's that that turnaround that's pretty quick, the focus on the players. But at some point, you're evaluating that game plan before you head into the next week. What kind of things do you look at and just evaluating yourself, your staff, the decisions made, et cetera?
Yeah, I think, you know, to kind of backtrack a little bit, throughout the week of game planning, I like to – in my computer, I hold a list of things that happen throughout the week and I do it on a daily basis. So like, what did we do, you know, maybe in the skill position, quarterback, you know, and each person in, you know, what were they doing well in practice that week? You know, what did they struggle with? Why? And how did we try to like help them? You know what I mean? Through practices, like what were we trying to do to help that person be successful? And keep a running tab. And so what I did was at the end of the games, or what I do is at the end of the games on Sundays, you know, after watching the film, is, okay, looking back at maybe some of the mistakes that were made, were they the same mistakes that happened in the practices? And if there are consistencies, there's fine consistencies in there, then we got to either fix it. Like, our job as coaches, we got to fix it. Did we not show them the look enough? Did we force that concept? Did we force this type of play on them when really probably wasn't good? I mean, gosh, look at the evidence. Like, the evidence shows us that they weren't good at it all week. Then why are we going to do it on you know, Saturday night when it counts? So I think there's a lot of self-reflection in that time. And then also, as we're going through watching the film, we'll grade it individually. Then we'll come back together as the offensive staff. And then, you know, we'll go ahead and we'll watch it as a staff again, and we'll talk through, you know, some of the things of gosh, you know, that's my bad. I told him this, or, you know, or whatever it is, or try to find out what those decisions were by the quarterback or any other position, and how we're going to remedy this problem. If it is, you know, habitual or whatever it is. And so, you know, and then we talk through, like, in certain situations, maybe we should have got this call, or maybe we should have had this instead. And there's that fine line too, right? You don't want to offend anybody, and we're working towards a common goal. But at the same time too, though, like, we got to get this thing right. If not, it's just going to continue on, and we're going to have consistent discrepancies throughout the whole season, ultimately losing football games. And we don't want that to happen. We want to get our players in the best position to make plays. So, you know, there's a little bit of talk and dialogue there too, but, you know, I think, that's kind of what the process looks like. And then at the end of that meeting, the offensive meeting, then, you know, we'll have a full staff meeting, and, you know, Rollo will go through the room and ask each position coach, you know, what were some of the things they did good? What were some of the things they did bad? And, and, you know, explain why they were good and explain why they were bad and what we're going to do to go forward. And the good thing is Romo's typically in our meetings offensively. So he knows what's going on. He understands what's going on. And ultimately it's not like anything that he doesn't know, you know, from watching the game. The other thing too, what I like to do, since Romo played the position at a high level and, you know, he's coached quarterbacks all over, is throughout the week, I like to ask him, you know, is there something that you want me to work with these guys more, or, you know, with the quarterbacks, is there something that you don't like that I'm doing with them, or, you know, whatever it may be, because ultimately it's his team and it's his program and I want to do right by him. So I'm always putting down the ego and going in to talk to the head coach and just ask him, like, hey, is there something that you want me to change? Or, and a lot of times they'll say, no, I think what we're doing is great. I think, you know, the drills that you're doing is great. It's getting them prepared. You know, and there's some things that sometimes they'll say, hey, you know, I think we're neglecting this. Let's get them this, or let's, you know, drill this, or let's get him to do this, or his eyes aren't right on this concept. And so constantly be having a guy like Romo right down the hall from me, that's our head coach, that's able to communicate that to me. And again, you know, a lot of times the head coach has a lot of other things that's going on in his mind. So as a position coach, as a coordinator, whatever it is, going to the head coach and just asking him, because sometimes, you know, he's busy. He may think of something in the middle of the day and forget by the time he tells you to practice, right? So I think just always being on the same page and just asking him, you know, how does he see things going, and just making sure that you're doing right by the head coach is always a great thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that quality control part is so important. I agree. You have to handle it tactfully, because you are working together, right? It's not about,
right,
you know, knocking somebody down. It's just about making sure everybody's on the same page and you're moving forward together. There's something I thought about as you know, we're talking a little bit about, you know, looking at those things, and this became something was effective for us, and it started with our openers, as I mentioned before, and it kind of expanded mm-hmm. from there. But one thing we would do as we were putting together our openers is I would pull those from the practice clips through the week, and
yes.
and we would voice over those first 10 as to what we were thinking and a little bit about why we were doing it, and that was shared with our players. So they would get our initially it started just with our openers, right? We would send it out that way. Mm-hmm. And we started looking at, well, you know, this is, you know, we don't necessarily carry a ton. Like our third mediums were somewhere in the 6 to 8 range, if I remember right.
And right.
Third and longs, you know, were less. Our third and shorts were less. So here's right. the few plays we have on here. Let's go back through the week, and we would put the playlist together like that, so I could go and pick from there those reps. And I can tell you this too, as I would go through and look at it, it was like a final quality control. Like, well, we really
right.
looked bad at this play this week. I'm not sure I feel good about calling it. It might get scrapped, right? Or maybe there was a key thing you needed to review if you were going to carry it. But those short voiceovers, and none of these were more than, you know, 4 or 5 minutes long, so we keep the players' attention. Mm-hmm. But what key coaching points could we share that way? And as I, what made me think about it though, is it was our quality control, right? Because we're thinking
right.
something, but you know, you have to go back through that course of the week. And if you didn't have a good week on that play, boy, you know, I'm not sure you want to call it.
Right, right, absolutely. And I think that's a great point. You know, I like to spend a lot of time. We don't do too many voiceovers with our plays on video as much, just because with our offense and the run and shoot, there's so much information that could be
right.
shared. And sometimes if you forget to say it, then does it be, you know, is it taught? And again, there's a lot of different ways to do things, but what, you know, kind of that whole quality control thing, I like to do that on that Friday nights, or, you know, if we're playing a lot of games out here is on Saturday nights. And even while we were at Hawaii, we had Saturday night games. We'd meet extra on that Saturday morning, that one last time. And again, it's asking them, you know, hey, you're getting this coverage and this is the play, you know, where's your eye starting, and have them talk through the plays. I mm-hmm. think that's another great exercise for those guys to do, because not only, right, it's about what they know, and if they can voice it, then you feel confident that they know what they're doing. And the other thing too is the other guys, you know, they're going to learn. I think that's where I think we probably struggled a little bit last year, was we didn't have as much peer-to-peer leadership as you know, successful teams typically do. And I think that's a way to build that peer-to-peer leadership, is having your players talk through plays and explain it to the other younger players or other guys, right? And so that's a lot of things that we do. I know we're going off subject here, but that's a lot of things that we do here, is we have an open dialogue a lot of times. So these guys can talk to one another, because when you get to those player-led practices in the summer, right, coaches aren't out there.
Right.
So they better be able to coach each other up. And if they can't verbalize and they can't communicate to what we want as coaches for them to be able to do, then you got the blind leading the blind out there. Then it's like, gosh, is this player-led practices even worth it, or is it hurting us more? What's the value in it? But yeah, getting back to what you said about just those, you know, quality control, and you're right, you got to look back at practices, you got to look back at Monday, you got to look back at Tuesday, you got to look back at Wednesday, you know the cleanup Thursdays, whatever it is you want to call it, final Fridays, and you got to see, man, if in those critical moments in situational football, that's all football is, situational football, man, if it's third down or it's red zone and gosh, there's a turnover, or there's just a bad read or interception, whatever it is, like, do we really want to put that out there when our jobs are on the line? It's critical moments,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, the players want to win the football games, and gosh, the last thing you want to hear, right, is come off the field and you hear in the distance when your players say, that was a dumb call. You know what I mean? Like, that's not cool. You know, that's not right. So I like that exercise that you talked about, though.
Yeah, definitely a lot of things you can look at. And, you know, we shared a lot of ideas here, and it's not necessarily practical to do every single thing we talked about, as we've reviewed different ways we do it and different ways other people do it. But I think there's a lot of tools that you can look at and really vary throughout the course of the season. You know, I mean, sometimes you need to switch things up to get things going. But it was a great conversation here. I know you are going to be back on the road. Recruiting is opening up. We got camps going. For our listeners, Coach, what areas of the country are you recruiting?
Yeah, I'm going to be down at the SMU camp, Florida State camp, and I think it's right, June 5th is SMU, June 6th is Florida State, June 7th, I want to say it's Georgia Tech, and June 8th, Kennesaw State. And then we have our own camp here on June 19th, and then I'll be at the UNLV camp, I believe it's June 27th. You know, we have another set of coaches that are going out, and they're going to hit up Sac State and I think the Redlands camp. And, you know, say that real loosely, because who knows what's going to happen, and everything's changing every day with COVID protocols and mandates and all that stuff. But, you know, you can go on our Washington State Twitter. It'll have all the camps, you know, on an edit of what each coach is going to be and what coaches, you know, and what camps you're going to be at. So I encourage you guys to go check out, you know, our Washington State football Twitter. And the more that we can see, you know, and help out, and gosh, we can't sign everybody to Washington State, right? But if we can just help, you know, any student athlete get better in any way, and help them get to achieve their goals to play Division I college football, that's what we're really here for. Because, you know, the logos may change on our polos, but we're here for the common goal of giving these young student athletes an opportunity to achieve their goals and teach them life lessons throughout. So that's what we're about.
I love that, Coach, and I really appreciate you taking the time to make coaches better here today and sharing some information. And for those guys out there, one last thing, where they can find you on Twitter.
At Coach Stutzman.
Coach, as always, great to catch up with you. Best of luck to you as you and the Cougars get out on the road here this summer and going looking for those future guys, and certainly best of luck in the 2021 season.
Hey, thanks, Coach, and I appreciate any time I have to get on here and talk ball with you. And, you know, what you're doing for football is a great thing, and we appreciate you more than you know.
Thanks again for listening to the Coach and Coordinator podcast. Please check out all we're doing at coachandcoordinator.com. We've got some great things coming for you in May, and for the last 3 months or so of this offseason, we'll be back with All In on Offense and our deep dive on defense. And we have some great interviews with coaches, as well as some quick casts that we'll throw in there. Check out all we're doing again at coachandcoordinator.com, and follow me on Twitter at Coach K. Grabowski.